Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
On this episode of Creative Control, a spirited conversation between myself and Tim Heidecker and Greg Turkington. They are the hosts of the popular film criticism web series On Cinema at the Cinema. Well, technically, Tim is the host, Greg is the guest expert, but they seem to mostly be doing the show together, so they're kind of like co-hosts. And Tim is also the star of the hit action web series Decker, and Greg appears in that a little bit as well. So the new season of On Cinema has just started. It's season 6. You can learn more about it at Adult Swim, and you can look at episodes on YouTube as well. And I figured it would be a nice time to catch up with them because it's Oscar season. The Academy Awards are coming up. These two know their stuff when it comes to films. So this is it. This is myself and Tim Heidecker and Greg Turkington. Enjoy, and we'll see you at the movies. This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Selma, Wild, Just Eat It, Still Alice, and more. Spend Oscar night at the E-Bar, where they'll be screening the 2015 Academy Awards broadcast starting at 7 p.m. And on February 25th, Governor General's Award winner Michael Harris is at Lakeside Hope House to read from and discuss his new book, The End of Absence. The Bookshelf is an independently owned culture hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. More information about their hours, listings, blogs, and accessibility, please visit bookshelf.ca.
So eat it, just eat it. Don't want to argue, I don't want to debate. Don't want to hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't...
Tim Heidecker is the host of the highly esteemed film criticism web series On Cinema at the Cinema and the star of the action show Decker, both of which air on Adult Swim. After a dramatic exit at the end of season 5 and missing the first episode of season 6 recently, Heidecker has left Jackson Hole, Wyoming and is back in Hollywood at the helm of On Cinema at the Cinema, providing excellent insight about what we should all see at the movies right now. Here to discuss this further and hopefully even give us a sense of how this year's Oscar race is shaping up, accompanied, I believe, by his frequent On Cinema guest expert, Greg Turkington. This is the great Tim Heidecker. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. Now, is Greg there?
No, he said you'd be calling in. He's running late. I guess he's coming from a movie.
Oh, right. Of course. Of course. Okay.
But he'll be joining us soon.
Okay. Well,
I think it's a good opportunity, while we don't have him on the line, just to clarify the reason I came back and not have him interrupt us and sort of give this revisionist version of On Cinema History. You know, as you guys, some of you guys probably know, I entrusted him with the franchise, with the brand, and left to go on and pursue other things. And I trusted that he would handle that appropriately. And he didn't. He kind of threw the whole franchise under the bus with his debut 601 episode that you can watch on YouTube. And it was a complete train wreck, and you had the whole On Cinema family completely, you know, their spirits were broken over this. And I had to give up everything I had built in Jackson Hole, and I give up my life and some of the relationships that I was just beginning to start, and return to Los Angeles and reclaim my throne as the host of On Cinema. And that's where we're at today.
Now, I happen to agree with you. I thought the first episode that Greg hosted was, in fact, a train wreck. I mean, I used that exact phrase in a review I wrote. At the same time, in my review, I kind of suggested perhaps it might be a bit too early to judge him just based on one episode. Did you give that any thought, like maybe we should just see how this plays out, or did you obviously wanted to jump in right away?
Yeah, there was an initial discussion I had with Greg about me coming on board from a behind-the-scenes perspective and sort of just directing and advising him, sort of being a consigliere in terms of from the old mafia movies like Godfather 1 and 2.
The Tom Hayden? You're talking about the Tom Hayden puppet character?
Yeah, the puppet master and the guy sort of pulling all the strings. But when I got to L.A., I saw the studio and I saw the lights and the cameras. I thought, aha! This is my opportunity to claim back what is rightfully mine. And I just sort of instinctively went to the host chair and never looked back.
Now, you've used this phrase a few times, rightfully mine. Do you feel like your role as the host of On Cinema is sort of preordained or something?
Well, look at the facts. I mean, I started the show several years ago. It was my show. Greg Turkington was merely a guest. I've had other guests on the show. You don't see them coming and claiming the host chair. And he's a, you know, he's a little, I hate to use the word rat, but sort of a rodent-y kind of squirmy kind of, always trying to usurp, always trying to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And finagle is the word I'd use, and sort of get more credit where credit's not due. And the truth is, if I had my choice, I'd have somebody else in that chair, but I don't have a lot of options, and he's put me in that position. So I'm left with the cards I've been dealt, and I play them fairly.
I'm a bit confused by this. Why don't you have more options? You're right in the seat of movie-dom. You're in Los Angeles. Couldn't you have anyone on the show besides him?
I've tried. It's been a big, long, I don't know why. It's just a lot of times I think people in the business, it's interesting. I think people that are in the business don't want to be critical of the business. So you almost have to come from an outsider's perspective to give real honest reviews about movies. Mm-hmm. So when I go to some of the famous people I might know or some people that are movie directors and producers and stuff, they say, of course, I think X, Y, and Z is a bad movie or a good movie, but I'm not going on the record. I'm not going public with that. So it's very difficult to get real experts, real people from the business to do it. And I've got so many other things going on in my life, personal things and business prospects, that I don't have time to go and do a casting call and try to find every film editor, film critic out there and get them on the show. So it's just maybe it is laziness on my part. But for now, I'm stuck with Greg. And, you know, there's an obvious he does know his stuff when it comes to movies. He is an expert.
That's
and
true.
I do value that.
That's true for sure. Now, I have to say I'm a little confused because at the end of last season, you really seem sick of movies and actors, and now you're talking about how, you know, you kind of explain what compelled you to come back, but Can we go back to the end of season five? What was going on with you at the time that made you so sick of what you were doing?
Well, I had gotten some terrible news that I was a father, and that was just really put me off.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Hey guys.
Sorry, Tim. I feel like we're being interrupted here. Hello.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
Oh, Greg, is that you?
Hey, Greg.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
sorry, I'm a little late. We started. I go to this movie program they have at the library on Thursdays at 10 a.m., mostly for seniors and stuff like that. But it starts at 10 normally, and they started at 10:30 because there was a problem with the tape. So, I couldn't get out of there in time. I had to see how the movie ended.
I suppose.
What movie did they screen?
It was a lot of fun. It was High Anxiety, Mel Brooks.
Nice choice. That's a good choice. I suppose that's fine that you were late. We were just going through the recent history of the show, Greg. So Tim was just catching us up on why he came back and his thoughts about you and the show.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. Yeah. I mean, I don't see eye to eye with Tim on all these.
Nobody
issues,
asked you a question,
but
bringing you up to speed on where we're at in the conversation. And I was actually
right.
When you interrupted.
Right. Tim, is it possible for you to...
I didn't interrupt. I called in.
No, you did interrupt. You called in right when we were in the middle. I was in the mid-sentence, and you interrupted. So it's okay.
Well, you should have waited until I called in to answer any questions, because you may be giving a slanted point of view.
As I explained to the guy on the phone here, I don't have time to do this all day. So
yeah, Tim, my name's Vish, by the way. Tim doesn't seem it's Vish. My name's Vish. Sorry, Greg. Tim doesn't seem to have a lot of time, so we had to move on without you there. Sorry about that.
Well, he doesn't have a lot of time because he left a bunch of dirty dishes last night, and they're still there, and I don't know what he's so busy doing. It doesn't seem like he's got anything going on.
Okay, so I guess development on Decker 2 is just going to continue, but who's going to be doing that? It's Ghosts?
I think he might have you there, Greg. Anyway, we hadn't got to Decker yet. I was just asking Tim about what happened at the end of Season 5 and the kind of mental state he was in, because he left the show declaring that he hated movies and actors, and he left the show.
No, I never said I hated movies.
So you do.
There's a priority list that should exist in all of us, and movies should not be anywhere near the top of that list. Movies are fun, and they're
neither should motorcycles shouldn't be at the top of it either.
I agree. I'm not going to disagree with you on that at all. I admit when I'm wrong, and when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And, you know, at the end of that season, I'd gone through a terrible medical problems and bad medical advice, and I found out that I was a father, which unfortunately I had arranged for there to be a procedure done, in which case I wouldn't have been a father had that procedure been, if you know what I mean. I'm not going to use the word, but, and turns out she didn't take my advice on that. I don't know what she did with the money I sent her. But the truth is, I am a father, and at that point in my life was not the news I needed to hear. So I unfortunately did not behave appropriately. I was in a dark spot, and I am not in that spot anymore. I'm very healthy and happy right now, and recommitted to my role as the father, the king of On Cinema, the host.
Sorry,
of On Cinema, and the executive producer, director, and star of Decker. One of the most successful franchises in web history. It's going to go down as a revolutionary show that changed the game on the internet and on cinema. Now is better and bigger than it's ever been before, because people are finally starting to get that this is the show you got to watch before you go to the movie theaters.
All right.
And that's because of the hard work that I've done to build it up as a place where you can be sure that the information you get is accurate, that we have movie trivia that is coming straight from an expert and that type of thing. Certainly the show would have been built up years ago if we didn't have all these distractions with this baby and the motorcycles and all this other stuff that you're still talking about now during this interview.
I'm only talking about it because it was a question directed to me by this interviewer. You understand that? I'm not coming on here to announce all my problems. It's the last thing I want to do.
Well, I appreciate that.
Do you have any questions about the show or the movies coming up or the process of how we decide what we, you know, questions that aren't mired in the history and sort of this, the past that I'm trying to get over anyway?
Yeah, let's actually, since Greg has just joined us, why don't we move on and ask Greg a couple of quick questions, and then we'll come back to you, Tim, all right? So, Greg, I know
I'll get off the line then, because I'm not going to listen to his answers.
I really wish you'd stay on. I just wanted to get both your insight from both of you. That's why I wanted you both on the phone.
All right. Well, I'm going to hang up if Greg starts going into what we should have done, what could have, would have, bullshit. I'm not going to get into that stuff.
Totally fair, and I'm sure Greg will be equally diplomatic. That's fine. Now, Greg, you seem to really relish your role as host in the season 6 premiere. How would you describe the experience for the debut? Because I feel like there were some mixed reviews.
The reviews were very solid. They weren't mixed. If you mean by mixed, there were men that liked it, there were women that liked it, there were people of all ages, all races that thought we were on the right track. Because over the past few years, the past few seasons, the show kind of was like a train that went off the rail and stopped focusing on movies.
Excuse me,
which
Greg,
is what
can
the
I
show
interrupt?
Was supposed
you,
to be about.
Greg. Hello, Greg.
Yes.
I don't understand the conversation we had last week in which we both agreed that we're not going to go back and do Monday morning quarterbacking on what could have, should have, would have been.
Oh, no, I'm
and
not.
We agreed
I'm,
that we're going to bury the hatchet
that.
With that and we're going to move forward in
yes,
positive
that's,
direction.
That's what I'm doing. That's exactly what I was saying is that, the show's better than ever. I mean, last week's episode was still the highest rated show in the history of On Cinema, but I feel like we might surpass that later on in this season. I'm not sure. I'm not sure we can surpass the quality of the first show now that W.C. Fields has been relieved of duty. But we're going to try as hard as we can. Tim's got some ideas, and we'll just let those ideas play out and see where the show goes.
Right.
As long as we keep focus on movies, we can't go wrong.
On the last episode, episode 2 of season 6, one of your new segments seems to have been canceled on the spot. Tim decided it shouldn't continue. What is the status of your On Cinema segments generally right now, Greg?
Oh, I've got tons of them filmed, prepared, produced, ready to air. And so it's just going to we're just going to have to look at the scheduling and how long we have in each episode to drop these segments in. Whether it's On Cinema On Location, Popcorn Classics. I'd love to revisit Golden Age comedies sometime this season if Tim will let us,
nope.
Because that was the most popular segment that we've had.
I was very
Tim's Mailbag. Tim's Mailbag was always a popular segment. We've got a lot of these things lined up.
Tim, what is your fundamental issue with some of Greg's segments? Because you don't seem to enjoy
them. I have no issues with his segment. I mean, there are times when I feel like he doesn't pull his own weight. When last season he did an entire every On Cinema On Location was some other part of Oh God, a movie that nobody
cares
about.
Which is a great movie.
It's a fine
People
movie.
People care about it. That's why there were
doing
two
one
sequels.
One segment on that makes a little sense. It's not the greatest, but to do every segment on different filming locations of Oh God, nobody
People
wants.
People are
to do
interested.
That,
you know? I get letters every day from people
again.
Who want more.
We're doing it again.
No.
We're going back. And
gentlemen, please. Gentlemen.
We're doing it again. We're retreading over old arguments, and it's a waste of my time. It's a waste of your listeners' time.
No, I apologize. I didn't mean to stir up any trouble here. I think, Greg, I think Tim may have a point here. It did seem strange that you were so focused on the film Oh God in terms of your location segment. Have you considered maybe trying something else in the next installment, maybe sets from Oh God, You Devil, because that would be...
Well, I mean, the fact is Oh God is one of the most popular movie comedies of all time, and, you know, it's a movie that people ask about. It's a movie that people want to see. It's a movie that's frequently rented and borrowed from libraries and things like that. So, you know, no movie takes place in only one location other than My Dinner with Andre and some of these types of art types of films. Every movie has several locations, and so to delve into it, you do need to show the different locations. Now, I had five more of these Oh God segments lined up, and they're never going to see the light of day now because of Tim's rageaholism.
Do you have some
Okay, so now you've diagnosed with my you've diagnosed me.
Yeah. Okay. Listen.
I just want to know what your qualifications are to diagnose me with this made up term, rageaholicism, whatever it is. But tell you what, you know what, Greg? We're going to have a conversation tonight at our house, and we're going to go over exactly how we're going to handle ourselves in the future when it comes to doing press like this. Okay? And I'm going to have to write you a script so that you don't fuck up and say the wrong thing and embarrass me and embarrass yourself. You're going to read from the script as I tell you to.
All right, listen, I want to get into some actual news about Decker, and, you know, the Oscars are coming up. I know that people want to hear your opinions about that, but I do want to delve into some stuff that's come about on Cinema. For instance, Greg, at the end of last season, we learned that Ayaka and her baby were staying with you at your place. What's the latest news on that situation?
The latest news is that they, back in Japan, they went back to Japan. I think when they realized that Tim was a deadbeat dad, they went back to Japan.
All right, goodbye.
Tim, please don't hang up. Is he still there? Tim, are you still there? Greg, are you still there?
I'm still here. I mean, again, these are questions really that don't have much to do with movies. I mean, maybe one day they'll make a movie about, Tim and Ayaka, but that's not a movie that I think would be very popular.
I appreciate what you're saying, but you have to understand that for those of us who watch the show, we're trying to get our insights about modern film, but these things just keep leaking into the show, and they can't help but be distractions. I agree with you that it's problematic for the program, but, I mean, at the end of episode 2, we seem to get the impression that Tim was staying with you. He needed to buy a new mattress? Is that
Yeah. Well, he got in from Jackson Hole and he had no place to go. And this is, again, information that I would hope doesn't end up on the program. But, you know, he lost a lot of money in a bad deal in Jackson Hole buying this bad property that had no running water, no way to get water to this property. He bought all this acreage and kind of wasted a lot of his money. He's got this small business loan that he's collecting on to start this publishing business. I'm not sure what's going on there, but for the time being, you know, I said he was welcome to crash at my place, because that seemed to be what he wanted to do. It's a temporary situation, clearly.
I can't imagine you two trying to coexist in a home, let alone the TV show. I mean, it feels like there's a lot of tension between you two. I mean, again, it makes for very compelling television. It makes for very compelling film criticism to have that, you know, adversarial nature to your relationship. But
it is good for the film criticism. I mean, it's always nice when you have differing opinions, and that's what has made the show so popular, is that we don't always see eye to eye on these things, you
right.
know. And yeah. There's nothing that tickles me more is when a new movie comes out and we sit down to talk about it, and I realize, wow, you know, I really didn't like this, and Tim really did, and let's discuss why. You know, that's what gives the show some fireworks. And the sad thing is that, you know, because of the nature of these types of shows, you only have so many minutes to discuss anything. So if you've got 4 minutes set aside for each movie, and then Tim takes up 6 or 7 minutes, talking about his swollen foot or his acupuncture or any of these other outside topics, his motorcycle accident, any of this stuff, you start seeing the minutes to actually discuss the movies dwindle, and you can't give incisive criticism in one sentence. You need the time to really get into what makes a movie great. And so that's always been my complaint, and I thought we fixed that problem on the premiere episode. As you may have seen, it was all about the movies. We didn't spend a second on anything else, and that's why we were able to give more in-depth reviews of Jupiter Ascending and of the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. Those reviews were much more in-depth than the show is traditionally done, and that's why I was receiving all these cards and letters from people saying, this show's on the right track, and we really like what you're doing here.
Yeah, I'm not sure I share that sentiment Greg, because I found the first episode to be very bizarre. I mean, if people haven't seen it yet, and I urge you to do so, on YouTube or go to Adult Swim, because I got to say, I almost found it disturbing. Your guest expert Greg, was you. It was you.
Hello?
Oh, Tim, are you
well,
back?
Well, that was a cute...
Tim.
Yeah, I apologize. Hello?
Hi, Tim, you're back.
Hello. Yeah, I was able to call back in.
All right, well, we're pleased to have you. I was just asking Greg about the first episode of the season six there, where his guest expert was himself, but pre-taped.
Yeah, well, it wasn't.
Yeah,
that's not exactly
true.
The point was this, is that it's hard to provide expertise and also host a show. It's wearing too many hats, you know. Well, I'm not hosting the show. Now I'm focusing on the expertise. But we thought it would be sort of an interesting thing. I could have just gone out and been the host and tried to give expertise too, but we felt that that would be distracting for the viewer. And the best way to do it was to divide it into two different people, the host in the hosting chair and the expert in the expert chair.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the
what
best way to probably
about,
do that.
On Tuesday after, let me take everybody back a minute. Tuesday afternoon, after about 28 hours with Greg talking about how to save the show, because frankly, by Sunday of last week, in my opinion, the show was on life support.
Well, that was just your opinion.
The
ratings were through the roof. The ratings were higher than they've ever been.
What did we finally agree on Tuesday afternoon? You looked me in the eye and you said, "I am sorry. I made a mistake. I was wrong."
What I said was, "I think you would be great as the host again. I'm happy if you insist. I'm happy to just focus on the expertise as long as you will agree that we will focus the show on movies and movies only. As long as we can agree on that, I'm happy to slide over to the expert chair."
Then, as per our agreement, I said, "You need to say the following words. I am sorry. I was wrong." And that's what you said. And that's the end of the conversation. You were wrong.
Well, I wasn't wrong when I said we need to focus on films. We need to focus on James Bond, on Star Wars,
not have
Star Trek,
our
and all
listeners
these
into thinking that there was going to be an expert on the show, when in fact it was a very poorly taped version of yourself that was misallocated.
I did say I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong in that I didn't use a new videotape, so it was.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Very glitchy. They don't make videotapes anymore. You have to use old videotapes. Unfortunately, that tape had some problems, and so we didn't have the seamless transition between host.
But we didn't
guest.
Parse. We did not parse about. We did not parse what specific aspects of your debut as a host were wrong. The understanding that I had in our conversation was that you were admitting that the show itself and your choices, the choices you made holistically for that episode, were wrong, and that you were sorry for that. That was my
understanding. No. All I said was that I thought that you were a better host, and I stand by that. I think you're a great, great host, and it's really what made the show so popular. But I do feel that the show was better when it was just me, because then it was strictly about movies. So I reached a compromise where you come back as host, but we've refocused the show strictly on movies. That way everyone wins. You get to host, which is what you want, and I get to talk about movies in greater depth, which is what the audience wants.
There does seem to be a lot of confusion about Tim's re-involvement with the show. Like, I'm looking, Greg, at your Twitter feed from just prior to the second episode airing, and it says here, Tim is helping out with some ideas and sound issues. I learned a lot last week, and I'm ready to make a flawless episode two. It seems that, Greg, you thought you were going to be hosting episode two almost right up to the last minute. What happened that Tim ended up back on the air?
Well, a few minutes before we're supposed to shoot, you know, he's giving all this advice. A few minutes before we're supposed to shoot, he just, you know, sits down and says, this is what we're doing. So, I mean, I was a little surprised. I can't say that I was completely surprised because I know how he is, but, you know, the contract that we had for this season was for me to be doing the 10 episodes my way and with my guests, you know, and, you know, I'm willing to concede that Tim makes a great host and that this isn't the worst situation ever by letting him come back as host, even though I'm the one that's supposed to be hosting, by letting him come back, if he can focus on the movies, then I think this is the best case scenario for everyone.
You know, you allude to a contract there. Is this becoming a legal issue between you two? Or?
No, I mean,
there's one contract. It's a contract that I have with the On Cinema family. And they are loyal to me and understand that I am the host. And it's more of a covenant, if anything. It's a sacred contract, a sacred trust that they have, and know that I'm going to steer the On Cinema family in the right direction. And, of course, but I am not perfect. I make mistakes. One of the mistakes I made was leaving the show in the hands of somebody that was clearly incompetent and not up to the task. Now,
well, I'm up to the task of providing the expertise, and that's what I've done always.
Yes, and that's what you'll be doing now.
All right.
I know, and that's fine with me, as long as we can keep this outside junk out of the show and not bring in acupuncturists like Dr. San and all these people that get in the way of the movies.
Kind of contract, there's no legal contract. The only contract, like I said earlier, is between me and the On Cinema family, and the contract that I have with Turner, which allows us to, which funds the show.
But I have a contract with Mark, who plays W.C. Fields. I have a contract.
Yeah, you made a contract with Mark that had everything to do with you and Mark and nothing to do with me and On Cinema. So
because you weren't part of On Cinema, you were in Jackson Hole drinking beer with your buddies.
If Mark feels that he's in breach of contract with you, then he has every right to pursue that legally. You understand me? But it's got nothing to do with me, and it's got nothing to do with On Cinema or Turner or anybody that has anything to do with On Cinema.
All right.
For you.
All right, gentlemen. I think we're running out of time here, and we have a lot more ground to
cover. Yeah, I really do have to run now.
Okay. Let's, Tim, what's the latest news with your show, Decker? Everyone's excited about Decker 2.
Decker 2 is in the works. We are scripting right now, casting, going through that process. I'm going to be I'm going to Hawaii tomorrow to do some initial scouting and secure some camera equipment and crew and all that kind of stuff. We've got the first few episodes sort of boarded out, and I'm just so excited. I got some great ideas, and we're moving forward with it.
Okay, that's excellent. And Greg, what can you?
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, Greg, I
think Decker is fantastic.
And can you tell us more about the development of your character, Kingston? What's happening with Kingston?
Well, you know, you have no right to speak on that issue at the moment, Greg. You know, at this point, he hasn't worked himself in yet. I don't know how that would work.
Well, it works very easily. He's Decker's right-hand man. He's Decker's right-hand man.
No, he's not. Hold on. Decker doesn't have a right-hand man. He flies solo. He doesn't need help.
He needed help to crack the code for that briefcase. If Kingston hadn't cracked the code, you would have had a massive explosion in Central Park, you know?
Well, so at this point, there's no code. There are no codes. There's no combinations or anything like that yet. Okay? That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to divulge anymore. It gives too much away. It ruins everything for the audience if they know everything that's going to happen. I don't foresee Greg being a part of Decker 2, is all I'm saying right now.
Now, Tim, I mean, are you not staying with Greg right now?
Temporarily at the moment, yes, until I secure other, you know, get a, I'm a little picky when it comes to living spaces, and I'm not just going to jump into some, you know, year-long lease at the moment. Greg's kind enough to let me crash at his place, and hopefully just for the next couple of days or maybe a week.
Right, so isn't it awkward that you're staying and it's like he's doing you a courtesy of staying, letting you stay at his home, and yet he clearly wants to be a part of Deckard too, and you seem very resistant about bringing his character back.
You know what? That's because I have strength of character, and I have a commitment to the work that goes beyond friendships and it goes beyond sort of niceties. You know, some of the greatest filmmakers, we're not necessarily the nicest guys, and they're dictators, really, and they're auteurs.
But you take a movie like American Graffiti, which is one of the all-time classics, George Lucas, Ron Howard, the whole gang, and when you go see the sequel, More American Graffiti, there's no more Ron Howard, there's no more George Lucas, and you have this movie that's very unsatisfying because people love these. Where's Richard Dreyfuss? Where is he? He's gone, and that's what happens if you think about getting rid of Kingston for Deckard too, is you have people like, this is my favorite character. This guy really saved the day by cracking those codes. Why did you get rid of this character? You know, and you shouldn't get rid of a beloved character.
Let me tell you something, Greg. If I had Richard Dreyfuss in season one of Deckard, he'd be in season two of Deckard. I'd make that work because of the quality of the performance.
Oh, okay. It just seems like it's getting kind of insulting now. I mean, Greg, the other side of this is, and I'm not trying to start anything more between you, but some people wonder, like, what is your limit to how much you're going to take? Because externally, it seems like you are, you know, a victim of abuse on some level here.
No, I mean, we're just trying to make the best movie show that we can, and there's different personalities in any great TV show or movie or anything like that. You know, you hear about battles between Steven Spielberg and D. Wallace Stone during the making of E.T., you know, and you get these epic battles, but as long as the end results, which are on the screen, are great, then that's fine. Really, airing dirty laundry like this is not something we should be doing. I'd rather that if we had half an hour to talk to you, that Tim would give his 10 favorite popcorn movies, and I'd give my 5 favorite Bond performances and this type of thing, because that's really what people want to hear from us.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think we should shift over to something that everyone's talking about. The Academy Awards are coming up on February 22nd, and so I was hoping we could take a look at some of the major categories and get your predictions.
Yes.
Are you too willing to do
it? I've got the inside scoop. I have some friends at the Academy who are giving me information, which is not made public yet, but I can pretty much tell you exactly what's going to happen on Oscar night and kind of give it to you as an exclusive.
Okay, great.
And I can guarantee that what I say will come to pass because I do have my inside sources. As you know, over the years, being a movie expert, you do build up these friendships with folks in the industry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, well, this is excellent. Yeah, Greg, please go forth. I'd love to hear this.
I'm going to jump off because I've heard Greg talk about this before. Well, I have no prediction. Who knows who's going to win? But I appreciate talking to you.
But Tim,
and I wish everybody that you nominated all the best.
Tim, you don't have a choice for best picture or best director or anything, Tim? You just want to leave? I mean, you're a movie expert.
I'm not hung up on that kind of stuff. I don't get hung up on awards.
All right, well, listen.
If I got hung up on awards, I'd be asking the question, why haven't I received every award there ever was?
But are you?
And we should do, actually, we're going to do our On Cinema Oscar special this year live.
Okay.
And it's a better show than the Oscars. It's a more entertaining show. And we're going to introduce something called the On Cinema Movie Awards, which recognizes things that get overlooked, including my performance. We'll see if that's up for awards and Decker and that kind of thing. So as far as the Academy Awards go, the Oscars, I think if you focus on that too much, you lose perspective on what's really important in life.
I wish
everybody, of course, I wish them all the best, but I'll let Greg talk about his crazy predictions, conspiracy theories, and all that stuff. But I'm going to sign off.
All right, well,
it's not conspiracy theories. These are just Oscar picks from someone who knows and gets it right.
Sorry, Tim.
Not a conspiracy.
But Tim, just before you go, can you tell us what's next on Cinema?
More movies.
Okay, you're still
got a lot of movies coming out. Excited to talk about all the great movies that Hollywood keeps churning out. We're loving them.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. Sorry about that, Greg. I just wanted to catch Tim before he finally left there at the end.
Yeah. I don't know what, he's very erratic. But, the thing with the Oscars is, and this is very interesting this year, the past few years they've had 10 nominations for Best Picture, and that's the way it's been. And this year they only had 8. And a lot of people are scratching their heads and saying, well, that's odd, because there were actually hundreds of great movies released in 2014, not just 8.
Right.
And I would think the bigger problem would be narrowing it down to just 10. You know, I foresee a day when they have 20 films nominated for Best Picture, because 2014 was one of the best years in cinema history in terms of the quality. So to have only 8 nominations, I think has a lot of people scratching their heads. But that's part of Oscar's plan. The idea is this: there actually are 10 nominations for Best Picture. They revealed 8 of them already, and they're saving the last 2 to reveal on the Friday before the Oscars air.
Really?
And that's when they will announce the final 2 nominations for Best Picture. Yes, because what they wanted to do is create some controversy. The ratings for the Oscar TV special have been steadily declining in recent years, and they wanted to create some controversy. When they announced those 8 movies, the most common topic at the water cooler at work for anybody was, why wasn't The Hobbit one of these movies nominated for Best Picture? Why wasn't Annie nominated for Best Picture?
Uh-huh.
These were the 2 most popular and most critically acclaimed movies of 2014. Neither one nominated for Best Picture. Oscars lost their mind. You heard about it on radio talk shows, the conversations amongst friends. Everyone's like, I can't believe they didn't nominate Annie and The Hobbit. This is nuts. Well, that's kind of what Oscar had in mind, was to get you talking about it. On Friday, before the show, they're going to announce those final 2 nominations, Annie and The Hobbit. That will invigorate the Oscar viewing audience and people that were like, I'm not going to watch it this year. They didn't nominate The Hobbit. They didn't nominate Annie. Now those people are going to watch it. And they're going to get a whole second wave of publicity when they announce those last 2 movies. I can guarantee you right now that The Hobbit not only will be announced as a nomination, but The Hobbit will actually win this year because they have the votes. In my informal survey of Academy voters, I'm finding that The Hobbit will win with actually over 50% of the vote. It's 10 movies. The Hobbit's going to come in somewhere between 53 and 57%.
This doesn't.
And the other movies, it's spread out, 5% to Birdman, 6% to this, 12% to Annie, that type of thing.
I have to say, Greg, this seems very unlikely given the fact I just did a Metacritic search on The Hobbit and Annie. Do you know what Metacritic is? Do you understand what that's?
No.
Okay, Metacritic basically is a site that averages reviews. That's the easiest way to explain it.
Uh-huh.
So it takes every major critic who's voiced an opinion about a film, and it does a kind of survey of how a film is doing.
Are Tim and I on there?
I believe so. I believe you might be included. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at every critic. However, Annie received a 33% average rating out of 100, and The Hobbit hovering around 58%. These are not critically acclaimed films, yeah. Greg, is my point.
Well, I mean, you go to that website and those are the numbers you get, but I don't know who runs that website. If Hobbit and Annie are made by Paramount Pictures and it's Universal that created this website to push their own movies,
No.
Of course they're going to find the reviews that favor their movies over Annie and The Hobbit. You know, that's just how the business works. Unfortunately, it's not. Once you get money involved, things change. You can't always trust what you see. It could be coming straight from a publicist's mouth. Mm-hmm. That's why On Cinema is such a great show, because we cut through all that and give you straight from the hip movie expertise and opinions. And that's why people love the show. It's the real thing.
Well, we're out of time, so I think we have to agree to disagree here, Greg. I just want to point out, though, that this is a fairly accurate survey of what critics are saying. Metacritic is...
So I've never even heard of it.
It's quite renowned. There's no funny business going on. They just take every rating numerically. They apply a numerical value. They add them all together. They divide them up by the number of reviews, and then they get an average. And so currently, Annie has a 33% critics rating and a 4.9% user score. And I have to say that these numbers are not moving before Oscar time. This film has been out a couple months.
Those numbers are not correct. And also, I never said Annie was going to win Best Picture.
Right.
I think it's great, but you're right. It's not up to the level of quality of The Hobbit. But it is a great picture, and I think it deserves to win some awards, you know. And probably, from what I understand from my sources, Annie and Boyhood are kind of neck and neck for second place in the Oscar voting. But it doesn't really matter because they don't give a second place. They give a first place, and The Hobbit is overwhelmingly the favorite. And also, it's not critics that vote on the Oscars. It's movie people. It's directors. It's screenwriters.
Right.
Producers and that sort of thing. And if you talk to them, they're so excited about Annie and about The Hobbit as two of the best movies of the year. I also think that website, you know, it's unscientific how they get that information. You know, you can pick and choose. You could say, well, let's find a few bad reviews of Annie and let's only feature those. And, you know, then you end up with 33%, but that's not really how the real world works.
I don't want to necessarily promote the site, but I think it's on the up and up. That's all I'll say. I don't think there's any.
Well, I've never heard of it, and I've I've been doing this for a long time, and I've never heard of it. So I mean, it doesn't seem reputable to me.
Okay, who am I to question?
So I know all the websites. I know all the critics. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for quite a while. If I haven't heard of it, it probably either doesn't exist or it's not reputable.
What about IMDb, Greg?
Of course, I know IMDb, yeah, and that's a great site, a great resource for finding out, you know, names of, if you want to know who the gaffer was on a certain movie and you don't remember it from when you saw the movie, you know, sometimes you need to refresh your memory and look something like that up.
Okay, so if they provided a rating or an average, would you go by what IMDb has to say?
I wouldn't necessarily go by it because anybody can submit to that. If you get somebody from, what is this movie, Birdman, somebody from Birdman hires 50 people to sit in a building somewhere in the Midwest and have every one of them just over and over again log in with a fake name and give a bad review to Annie, you know, and you have programs like that take place. They pay these people minimum wage to sit there and create fake accounts and give 1 out of 10 to Annie over and over and over again. In the meantime, Birdman, suddenly they're going on and doing the same thing, giving Birdman 10 out of 10, you know.
Okay.
And these people make a living doing this and stuffing the ballot box. I'm afraid that it's true that this is how a lot of these things work. So I think IMDb is a great resource for information, but I think any time you allow someone to have an open ballot box, you just can't really trust the results.
All right,
I think if you've seen Annie, you've seen it, right? I mean, that is a new American classic, and there's no denying that. And that's why it broke box office records, and that's why it is one of the nominees for Best Picture.
I have to admit, I've not seen Annie. I will say that on IMDb, 11,000, almost 11,000 users chimed in on it, and it received a 5 out of 10 rating. And I know what you were saying earlier, you don't necessarily think these are legitimate results. I'm just putting that out there for you. Of 11,000.
Well, that's an awful lot of people voting, because you look at some of the classic movies and there's only a few hundred people that voted. So the fact that there's that many people voting, I think, backs up my theory that this was a boiler room of people paid to badmouth Annie, probably paid for by the Birdman people or one of these other movies, American Sniper. American Sniper could be doing this. I don't know. This is all top secret stuff. That's, again, why On Cinema is such an important resource, is that, this stuff has not been tampered with by some studio out to make a buck. This is true film criticism and expert opinions.
All right. Well, this is why I'm a fan of the show, and I want to thank you for being on the program. Greg, I would thank Tim, but I believe he's long gone, so that's unfortunate. I did ask Tim.
Well, I'm sorry about that. He got the hell beaten out of him in Jackson Hole before he came back. That's one of the main reasons he came back, was not just to make unneeded and unwanted changes to what was already a great show, but you know, he fell in with the wrong crowd, some of these bikers, and you know, they beat him up pretty bad, and he's I think he could have taken a couple blows to the head. I don't know, he's just, I think it's post-traumatic stress disorder almost from his experience there. So I apologize for him being a little erratic.
Well, that's fine.
I think his heart's in the right place. I think he wants the show to be great, and you know, he wants to pretend that I bended and caved and all this sort of stuff. But you know, I saw that he was gonna push through a takeover no matter what the audience wanted, no matter what I wanted, and the only way to really deal with this was to reach some sort of compromise. And I felt that a compromise where he gets to host again, but we focus on movies instead of drama, I felt that was a good compromise, and I hope the viewers agree.
So he kind of gave a generic response when I asked him what was coming up on episode 3 and beyond of the current season of On Cinema. Do you have any insights there?
Well, I have insight in that every week we've got a couple of movies to go watch and to review. And beyond that, I mean, you know, that's what the show is. It's like every week, you know, there's going to be more movies out and we're going to review them. Now, I've produced some outside segments that I'm going to be bringing in and, you know, that type of thing. I don't foresee this season having a lot of, you know, Ayaka and Dr. San and,
oh, okay,
and some of these people that have really sunk it in the past. I foresee this season as being the season where all we do is talk about movies, and hopefully further along, you know, we can add a third movie per episode and review three movies and
wow,
expand the popcorn classics, you know, so that we have two or three popcorn classics per episode. I mean, you realize if you cut out all of Tim's melodramas, think how much more movie criticism we could have had on past episodes.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where it's going to go this season. You know,
absolutely.
Wouldn't you rather have another popcorn classic than, you know, watching Dr. Sam, you know, put needles into Tim's arm? I mean, we could have talked about another great movie.
I totally agree with you. But yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what the On Cinema family is really clamoring for. So I appreciate what you're saying, Greg. I want to tell people that for more information and to watch every episode of On Cinema thus far and going forward, they can go to adultswim.com/videos/on-cinema, or they can look up On Cinema on YouTube. And Greg Turkington, it was a tremendous pleasure to get to speak with you. And, you know, just for what it's worth, we all have your back.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I think the true film buffs feel that way. There's folks who, I think, get off on weird melodramas that shouldn't be on the show. And, you know, those are the kind of people that, you know, like to pull over when they see an accident by the side of the road and, you know, rubberneck and look at the, you know, somebody dying on the side of the road. I mean, that's the kind of people you're talking about there.
Yeah.
People that are more interested in movies than in nonsense, that makes up the big bulk of our fan base. And that's what has made the show so successful and will continue to make it successful in the future.
Well, I'm proud to call myself a fan. Greg, it absolutely a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and best of luck moving forward.
Thank you so much. I will talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkana.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.